Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday. It's January 9th. And currently 18 degrees here in Old Town Park City. 13 degrees, I should say, was 17 degrees reported in Heber City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Wasatch back. Another kind of a wash, rinse, and repeat day from what we saw yesterday. Temperatures on the chilly side, upper 20s expected for Park City today with plenty of sunshine, 33 in Heber. Another nice start to Friday. Temperatures expected to be even a little bit colder, 9 degrees for tonight's low, 33 for the high on Friday. We will see increasing moisture Friday night into Saturday. Another storm system will bring snow showers throughout the weekend. With the heaviest snow expected on Saturday, lingering snowflakes on Sunday, temperatures just in the mid-20s this weekend for highs. Overnight lows will be hovering in the teens and low 20s. Several inches of snow is expected to accumulate, even for the Wasatch Back, right now 2 to 4 inches for areas like Park City, lesser amounts for the Heber Valley. But with these cold temperatures, we will continue to see off and on snow showers throughout Sunday, with northwest flow staying in place, clearing out on Monday. We'll stay in the mid-20s for highs on Monday with partly cloudy skies, and then sunshine takes over midweek. Should see 29 degrees on Tuesday and 37 by Wednesday. Sunshine again through middle of next week. Heber, 33 today, 34 tomorrow. Overnight lows down to the single digits tonight. 22 for the overnight low into Saturday. So a little bit warmer overnight just because of that southwest flow increasing as the storm moves in. Plan on snow showers as we get into Saturday afternoon, 31 for the high. 14 for the overnight low into Sunday with upper 20s on Sunday's high with lingering snow showers. And then partly cloudy skies Monday with drying conditions next week. Should see temperatures rebound to 32 on Tuesday with sunshine and 40 for the high on Wednesday. Again, the mountain areas hoping for a good 4 to 8 inches up on the slopes with about 2 to 4 inches for a lot of the mountain valleys this weekend.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
You bet.
And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Nikki. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning. So the backcountry was finally a little quiet yesterday. We had no new avalanches reported, but some of the ski patrols did trigger several large hard slabs with explosives. Those did fail down on the weak faceted snow. The primary concern remains triggering a large hard slab avalanche on that persistent weak layer that's now buried 2 to 5 feet deep. This danger is most pronounced on mid and upper elevation slopes facing west to north to east. Over the past few days, this unstable combination has become more stubborn, but remains highly dangerous. We're seeing fewer observations of instability, both while people are traveling in the backcountry and within pits, which is suggesting that the snowpack is gaining strength. However, it's important to remember we're only a few days out from our last significant loading event. So we want to understand that while the likelihood of getting an avalanche on this layer is decreasing, the consequences still remain high. So we want to give it a lot of space. The avalanche danger is going to be considerable at upper elevations and mid-elevation slopes facing west through north to east.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Council Member Tanya Hansen. Later on, the Executive Director of Mountlands Community Housing, Jason Glidden, with an update on their work plan for this year. And Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang with a preview of some of the upcoming screenings before the theater goes dark for Sundance. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include science journalist Olivia Campbell, who shares how four women physicists escaped Nazi Germany and made scientific history. Then from the vagus nerve to new discoveries about the sun, science you should know about in 2025 with journalist from Scientific American, the longest running magazine in U.S. history. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, of course, heard every Thursday between 9 and 10. Just 12% of Summit County's waste is diverted from the landfill, about a third of the national average. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that Recycle Utah wants to be the hub of a regional solution.
An estimated 400 cars cycle through Recycle Utah's less than half-acre lot in Park City every day. Residents can drop off everything from plastics, cardboard, metal, and glass to styrofoam, toothpaste, and batteries. Staff say they've outgrown the space and have been trying to find a bigger facility for years. But as Recycle Utah Board Vice Chair Helena Sedaris said at a public meeting Tuesday night,
had we simply moved to a larger site, we would probably still be here tonight having this very exact same conversation.
That's because there's a bigger problem, a countywide problem. Only 12% of Summit County's waste gets diverted away from its landfills. The national average is 32%, according to Recycle Utah staff member Jim Bedell. Peer communities like Vail, Aspen, Jackson, and Sun Valley all hover around the national average. Bedell's gold standard is Boulder, Colorado, which boasts a 52% diversion rate.
We're not a 12% organization. You know, this is very, very disturbing for us. 12% diversion is against everything Recycle Utah stands for, everything we teach, and everything we believe in.
And consultants Recycle Utah retained say the nonprofit recycling center is best positioned to be the center of the solution. They presented two options for Recycle Utah. One is a new 20,000 square foot building, the size of the center's current plot of land. Costing up to $20 million, it'll add an expansion for compost drop-off and business drop-off. The other is 30,000 square feet and could handle recycling from residential bins, which currently get sent to Salt Lake City. It could cost up to $25 million. Bedell says the recycling center prefers the larger option. Other cities and counties warned if they don't factor future growth into the plan, they'll always be playing catch-up.
In the context of funding we have previously dedicated to very important sustainability initiatives here, open space, transportation initiatives recently, we can afford $25 million. Now, unfortunately, Recycle Utah can't afford $25 million.
And it needs land. According to Bedell, the recycling center has had discussions with the Park City Municipal and Summit County governments about county-owned land near the Home Depot over the years. That's its preferred location, but it hasn't sealed the deal. Plenty of organizations have their eyes on the more than 40 acres on Old Highway 40. High Valley Transit and Mountain Regional Water are building new facilities there, and last year, County Council members Chris Robinson and Roger Armstrong toured it with local seniors interested in an assisted living facility. Recycling staff toured it a couple years back, too, and it says its new home wouldn't be the only recycling drop-off site. They want to expand drop-offs in Camas, Colville, the Snyderville Basin, and Park City, and truck that material to the central facility, what they call a hub-and-spoke model. So Recycle Utah is using the public meetings this month to garner support from taxpayers and politicians to find the center a new home and a place in local government budgets. Resident Brad Dixon pointed out that budgeting for the center now may allow more time to plan for an inevitable landfill expansion in the future.
There's a value proposition to investing the $25 million today versus doing nothing, because doing nothing is a significant cost to the governments today.
Summit County's commercial landfill is in Hennifer, its primary residential landfill near Rockport, and that one's first cell is already full. The county may break ground on a second $3 million cell later this year. Summit County Solid Waste Superintendent Tim Loveday says neither landfill can be expanded forever. Hennifer can last until 2057. Rockport has space for six cells, which would last until 2053. That's why Loveday says diversion is key.
The bottom line is, with both the political environment and the actual environment in Summit County, I don't think you'll ever see another landfill sited in this county. We have too many groundwater issues. Too many siting issues that will keep us from doing that.
Once out of landfill space, it's unclear where Summit County will have to send its waste. Wasatch County has to ship its trash nearly 80 miles from Heber to the Blue Bench Landfill in Duchesne County.
There is no reason to hesitate on this. And just to be clear, I do believe our local governments, both staff and elected officials, want to get this done. We just need a catalyst.
Recycle Utah will host another public meeting at Kimball Junction's library Thursday at 6 p.m. Complete details are available on Recycle Utah's website. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And the Park City Professional Ski Patrol Association announced last night that its members have voted to accept a new contract agreement with Vail Resorts that will run through April 2027. That contract does include a $2 wage increase for all entry-level patrollers and safety staff. That was a key demand during negotiations. Tenured patrollers will see average wage increases across the unit of $4 per hour, with some of the most experienced roles receiving an average increase of $7.75 an hour. The union says the deal incentivizes long-term career growth and retention, and that it has achieved wage parity with non-unionized Vail Resorts. The contract also includes enhanced parental leave policies and industry-leading educational opportunities. The patrollers return to work today, and Park City Mountain says it's working to open Tombstone, Dream Peak, and McConkie's. Well, the Summit County Council met for the first time yesterday. On the phone with a recap of the meeting, I have Council Member Tanya Hansen. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too. So you, Council Members Roger Armstrong and Megan McKenna, along with some department heads, were all sworn into office. A few of us had a good chuckle when Sheriff Frank Smith was about to be sworn in over Zoom and apparently brought up KPCW DJ Frank Lynch, who promptly informed all that they had the wrong Frank. So we do have the right guy in office, yeah?
Yes, we do. That's funny. I didn't know who the Frank was online. Now we know. That was funny, yeah.
Okay. Then you were promptly elected to serve as chair for this year. So what additional tasks fall into your lap as chair?
For the chair position, you oversee the helping put together the agenda for the weekly meetings. That includes closed sessions, agenda items, organizing that. That's the main component, as well as running point with the county council on just whatever issues might come up.
And how involved will you be with the state legislature as chair?
Well, actually, myself and Chris Robinson are the liaisons for the county council to the state legislature. So I'll be very involved. I'm excited and apprehensive.
Yeah. Well, the council also spent some time yesterday figuring out what committee assignments they'll have for the year. So how many additional committees does each council member oversee?
Well, I think this is interesting. There are 36 various committees that council members serves on, and we divide these assignments up so everyone's serving on different committees. So basically, we each get about 11 committees because sometimes there's more than one county council person per committee, such as High Valley Transit. There's three council members on that committee. So we each get, you know, around 11 committees each. It's a lot of time. But it's also very fulfilling because we get to understand what's going on that we wouldn't otherwise. Here's an example. I've been serving on the Board of Health, and I had no idea going into that committee exactly what our Board of Health does, how involved they are in the community, who serves on that committee. So it really allows us to get entrenched in some of these committees and understand what's going on. It's very fulfilling.
Yeah, so do the committee assignments rotate, or do you stick with Board of Health through your term?
No, some we rotate. Some it's best for people to stay on there for some longevity. So, you know, it depends on the committee.
All right. Let's see. During work session, a pretty lightweight meeting overall, there was a discussion on the Old Ranch Road project. This is to build about 1.7 miles of paved trail to provide a connection between Willow Creek Park and Round Valley Trailhead. I mean, this was needed years ago. How soon will it happen?
Oh, it's going to happen this year. They're ready to roll. Yeah. And it will, I think it's going to really enhance that roadway. It will provide wider roadside shoulders and some traffic islands and calming measures. It's much needed, and I think it's going to be very beneficial.
Yeah, right now we have kind of some, I mean, it's just so narrow at point that bikes can't ride alongside the road. How wide of a pathway are we talking?
So the project will construct 3 feet gravel shoulders and 5 feet paved shoulders on both sides of the road, you know, and then your roadway in the middle of that as well. So they're really going to widen that road.
Yeah. And of course, there is a creek that follows that road. Is that going to be an issue?
Well, the creek that follows the road along the Oscarthorpe portion will stay where it is. After the Oscarthorpe portion, it's going to move to the other side of the road to allow for this widening to happen.
Okay, and it'll be completed this year?
Yes. Yes.
Oh. So it is funded?
It is funded. Yeah. Yes, it's ready to go.
Yeah. Any issues from council during yesterday's discussion?
We did take some public input yesterday because there were several citizens there, but the staff has worked closely with the citizens in that area to make sure that, you know, we're working on all of their concerns. The only topic that really needs to continue and find a solution is the speed. Right now, it goes from 35 to 25 to 35 or vice versa, and we want a consistent speed along there. So our transportation department will be looking at that, and I'm assuming that you'll see one speed limit, and hopefully it's 25 miles an hour.
All right. So the folks that were there yesterday, were those residents of Old Ranch Road?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So are they concerned, though, that, I mean, again, right, you build it, they'll come. So they'll start to see certainly more bike traffic is my guess.
No, they didn't talk so much about that. They're concerned about, you know, big truck traffic on that road, and if anything can be done with that, we're going to look into that. You know, the traffic's already there. So there will be some islands put in there to hopefully, you know, help with the speed control. Speed was a big point of contention yesterday.
Okay. So do you think it'll go back down to 25, or what's the plan?
We're hopeful. We were hopeful. Stay tuned for that.
All right. Let's see. Council also approved its 2025 work plan. So what have you got ahead of you here?
So the 2025 work plan represents a strategic approach to advancing the council's priorities. And we put together these priorities in a retreat in October of 2024. The seven areas presented in this plan was the updates in the general plans, and you know that's going on right now, housing, regional planning and transportation, solid waste, and that's a hot topic right now with the presentations going on with Recycle Utah, which is really great, lands and natural resource management, senior citizen services, and public-private partnerships and county facilities. So those are basically the seven things that are included in this plan.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the Recycle Utah plans. Of course, they're looking for more room. And any discussion by council with regard to their ask for property there off of US 40 near the Home Depot on the Gilmore property?
There's always discussion going on about that. We're hoping something will move forward with that soon. We don't have anything to report at this time, but you know, we are working on that and hope to see something happen.
Okay, and then they also, at their meeting on Tuesday, noted that they've got a 20 and a 30,000-square-foot building that they hope to see. They prefer the expensive, bigger one, $25 million. What's the county's role in making this happen?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I did not attend those meetings yet. I'm going to attend tonight, and I don't know if other council members have attended. So once we attend those meetings and get that information, I think we'll have more conversation around that.
All right. Let's see. I also wanted to note that the council did not get involved in the ski patrol strike. We did see Park City Mayor and City Council at least send a letter. So why did the council stay out of this?
Oh, I think it was timing more than anything else. You know, we were very hopeful that things would get settled in these last couple of days of mediation. So we were waiting to see, you know, what would happen there. And you know, it's a tightrope to balance. Of course, we're supportive of the ski patrollers, but also, you know, Vail is a partner of ours. So we were waiting to see how that mediation went before we went out with any public notice.
Okay, Tanya, anything else going on that you wanted to?
No, thank you very much for the conversation today, and have a great day.
All right, Tanya Hansen, again, chair of the Summit County Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Kimball Arts Center's latest exhibit explores the intersection of visual art and film. Called Moving Pictures, executive director of the Kimball, Ollie Milliken, says that the exhibit celebrates Utah's film industry.
It's basically an exploration of all the different ways in which visual artists explore film. So film as a conceptual practice, like how there are stories made by films, or film as a medium, like the physical nature of film that we sometimes take for granted now that we use a lot of digital work.
The exhibit features various mediums, including photography, sculptures, and paint processes like Matthew Barney's electroplating prints. It's open through the 2025 Sundance Film Festival and intentionally aligns with the film theme. Milliken said the exhibit is tailored to educate artists and the local community. The center will host an art lounge to warm up and enjoy a complimentary beverage and explore the exhibit. The art lounge will be open January 24th through the 26th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Park City is moving forward with plans to build a new neighborhood of affordable housing next to Park City Heights. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
In 2023, the Park City Council gave its support to explore affordable housing on the western portion of Clark Ranch, a swath of over 300 acres along U.S. Highway 40. The city has identified 10 acres just south of Park City Heights that could serve as land for a new neighborhood. After issuing a request for proposals last year, the city entered into a 12-month exclusive negotiating agreement with developer Alexander Company in November. Park City Housing and Development Coordinator Sarah Weinman said the firm has decades of experience with mixed-use multifamily housing projects and a strong background working with low-income housing tax credits. Park City has no financial obligations during negotiations. Similar to the Engine House affordable housing project under construction in Bonanza Park, the Clark Ranch project is envisioned as a public-private partnership. The city would lease the 10 acres of land in Clark Ranch to Alexander Company for $1 per year for 50 years. After that, the property would revert back to city ownership. The Alexander Company has proposed a 190-unit project that would be 80% rentals and 20% for sale. Weinman said the development could include traditional rentals, duplexes, townhomes, and potentially single-family homes.
I think it's really great to add on to the existing Park City Heights community that's over there. And with everything sprawling, I think we have to take advantage of the lot sizes that we do have and provide as much density for housing for our workforce as possible.
It's unclear what the pricing of the units would be, but the city council has expressed a desire to provide affordable housing with the project. According to a staff report, the city hopes to finalize planning approvals and a development agreement by May 2026. If that timeline holds, construction could begin in July 2026. The Park City Council is scheduled to discuss the Clark Ranch housing project at its meeting Thursday. No final action will be taken. The work session is scheduled to begin at 4:10 p.m. at City Hall. The agenda and a link to attend virtually can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, it's going to be a busy year for Mountain Lens Community Housing. In the studio with me, with a preview of the work plan, I have the Executive Director of Mountain Lens, Jason Glidden. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you've got about 8 months under your belt here as Executive Director, and what, ready to get busy here?
Yeah, we've got a busy year coming up. We just finished up the WERIP program, which was the seasonal workforce program, incentive program, rental incentive program. You know, I want to first thank, you know, the Park City Chamber, Roz and Nall and Hotworks, the sponsors for that. Our results were very similar to last year. We had 36 beds that opened up and were for seasonal workforce. We'd love to see that. We had a goal of 40, so we fell just a little short of that. But we'd love to see an expansion of that program next year and getting more businesses involved. We'd love to offer more incentives to open up more space for these seasonal workforce.
Yeah, so how does it work briefly?
So if someone is interested in renting out their space, they can fill out our application on our website. And, we have to qualify that depending on the rent that they're going to charge for that space. We do have limits to make sure that it stays affordable. In exchange for that, they have the incentives of getting new Rosnall gear and some gift certificates from Hotworks. So it's just a way to try to incentivize folks to go ahead and open up any open space that they have in the community and get some more space for these seasonal workers that are coming in.
Okay, so these aren't standalone units. They can be just a room and a home.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, are there any minimum requirements that...
We'd like to see it on transit to make sure it's easy, because a lot of the folks that are coming in for the seasonal work don't have necessary vehicles. So that's what we look for that. And again, the rental price being affordable, and then once we do is we just post it, and then folks can log in to the site and take a look at it. If they see a place they're interested in, they can actually contact the owner directly, and they work out that, and then we see a proof of the lease. We go from there.
Okay. How soon will that come back online then? Don't you start in September or October?
We try to have everything up by October. Mm. That's when we really, start to see a lot more folks that are looking for places to stay for the wintertime. We'll probably start trying to promote it to our local businesses probably in midsummer. So we do have to, Scott House has done a lot with the chamber, and obviously Megan McKenna, when she was with Mountain Lands, did a ton of the work on this one. So we'll have to do a debrief and get geared up for next year.
Yeah, but real quick, Megan McKenna, of course, was elected to Summit County Council and then resigned as the housing advocate director there for the Housing Resource Center. Was that just due to a conflict of interest, or just not enough time to do the job or do both jobs?
I think it's a little bit of both, mm-hmm. right? I don't think that Megan wanted to to produce any kind of conflict of interest with her serving on that and then serving with Mountain Lands. In addition to that, we know the time constraints that, you know, or time commitments that are required, you know, to be an elected official. So I think between the two of those was the reason that we that decision was made.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's known as HOPA. This is the Holiday Village Parkside Apartments. There's two complexes, one along Monitor Drive, another along Kearns Boulevard. This is probably the elephant in the room here. I mean, yeah. It's a big project.
It's a huge project.
You guys ready to move forward this year?
We're hoping to. I'd say that we are still trying to work on the financing of it. Obviously, we rely on low-income tax credits, and so we need to apply for those. The application will be due in April. Decisions will be made in June on which projects are going to get funded. You know, unfortunately, or fortunately, one way or another, the low-income tax credit program has become so popular. This past year, the state had about $10 million in tax credits, which equals about $100 million because it's spread out over 10 years. And they had, you know, $40 million in requests. So four times the amount of money requested than what was actually available. And I think the other issue is that you're seeing an increase in cost in building. And so each of these projects are asking for more money so they can fund less projects. So the combination of the two, of the increase in the number of projects applying and the increase in construction, is making it extremely difficult to receive these funds.
Yeah, now housing or affordable housing is a big issue for the state legislature, Governor Cox. That $10 million that you talked about, that's state money or is that federal money coming
to you? That's the federal.
The
state does have a low-income tax credit program as well. It's much smaller than obviously the federal side. And as a reminder, you know, a lot of the focus at the state level has been more for ownership. Low-income tax credit is for rental properties. So there is a difference there. But, you know, I'm encouraged by all the talk that's happening at the state level. And, we'll continue to advocate for anything that increases the inventory of affordable housing. You know, there are some great programs that they've started to implement. You know, the first-time homebuyer down payment assistance program. We'd like to see, obviously, some changes to that because it only qualifies for new builds right now. We'd love to see that open up to existing builds as well. But it's moving in the right direction.
So the way I understand it, you've got between the two about 112 units, and you want to add an additional 200. So a total of over 300 between the two.
That's correct. Yeah, right now we have a total of 122 units between the two properties, and we would increase to about almost 320 units. So it's just short of 200 units.
And the challenge here, as I understand it, is that you have to keep, because of the tax credits that are on the property, you have to keep residents in place while you build 200 units.
That's correct. And also, we just didn't want to displace anybody, yeah. Right? So, I mean, because of that, we're in a phased approach, right? So we have to develop the first building, then move existing tenants from another building into that building so that we can move to the next of removing that existing building and moving and starting to work on that phase two. So, and there's low-income tax credits, and also we have funding from rural development as a rental assistance. So that to ensure that program stayed with the units, we also had to keep them in place.
So the buildings that we see there now, I mean, are those going away?
They will.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that is the plan.
It's all going to be new at one point.
That's correct. That is correct.
Okay. Yeah. A little bit closer together or higher? Where are you going to find the space?
You'll see a little bit higher, not too much. We obviously, with the affordable master plan development, that code allows to go up to four stories. We've chosen just to go to three stories at this time. The buildings actually will probably create a little bit more open space because we're able to get that additional density in there. So I think that the walkability will increase, obviously being located right next to the school and obviously, within walking distance of a lot of the other services, it's a fantastic location for some more housing to be put in.
Sure. Parking, does it go underground?
It does, yeah. So we will start to move that parking underground. We will still have some surface parking, and we'll continue to work with that. Obviously, you know, undergrounding parking is expensive, so any ways that we can reduce costs are going to help us.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned financing is challenging here. How much funding do you have in place and how much do you need? Do you have a total budget, project cost?
It's a kind of a moving target a little bit. So, low-income tax credits would, if we were able to receive those, will make up the majority of the funding. And then we can apply for additional you know, the state tax credits. We can also apply for what's called the Olean Walker Fund, which is another state fund that provides gap financing at a very reduced rate. And then there's some other opportunities for some additional gap funding. But we will have to do some fundraising. We've done some fundraising, and we're going to continue to have to do that. So, you know, and that's our focus right now, is we're continuing to work on it to refine the plan, to get our timetables in place, and to get the word out so we can keep fundraising.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, construction costs are just so all over the place. But do you have a solid number then for the project?
Well, I think the difficulty is this, is that when you apply for low-income tax credits, there's a scoring system. And that scoring system changes almost every year. And so you need to, in a sense, make changes to your project to hopefully make sure you have the most, the highest scoring project. You know, there's some prioritization for senior housing. There's prioritization for larger units. So as we come in and we find out what that scoring is, we have to adjust the plan a little bit and make some tweaks to it to make sure that we're trying to get the highest score possible.
Okay. I mean, we're talking $100 million?
I think, oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Over the project life, yeah, the whole thing, sure.
Yeah, easily.
Easily.
Okay. And then have you thought this out further in terms of having the impacts that we could see on Kearns or Monitor there?
As far as?
Just traffic and, you know, road closures, or no, you'll be able to keep it all on site?
I think right now, our plan is to keep it on site. And, you know, it does provide some challenges when you're keeping the residents on site as well. And so we've had to secure some temporary parking, the adjacent property next to Wells Fargo, so that residents had some availability for additional parking. You know, and obviously safety reasons, we're going to have to really make sure that we have, you know, good construction fencing and everything around it. So, but we do anticipate to keep on site.
Okay. Another project I wanted to ask you about was the Parkview Place project in Heber City. This is a community of 49 for sale price-restricted homes. How's that going?
Yeah, it's going fantastic. You know, we have developed 10 units there over the last 2 years, and we broke ground this past year on 6 of our self-help townhomes. So our participants, very much like Habitat for Humanity, participate in the building of these. So we're really excited. Those should be done in July, and we should have our next group starting hopefully in March or April for another 6 townhomes. In addition to that, we are partnering with Utah Housing Corporation with their Crown program, which is a rent-to-own program. And that will be for another 6 townhomes. And so we bring residents in, and they rent for a total of 15 years. At 15 years, they're allowed to buy the home at a very, very reduced rate. You know, and you know, we'll continue to look at other opportunities to finish up that, you know, that development. But it's been really great to keep moving it along.
Yeah, and I know this was before your time, though, that there had been a request of Heber City to allow some market rate units, and that was turned down. So they're all affordable.
And
it makes it more challenging than to do what needs to be done. Huh?
It does, you know, and we're fortunate that we have access, you know, rural development again, that they have a program for the self-help, which provides very low interest loans for the participants to be able to participate in this. But, you know, obviously as costs continue to rise, it's making it harder and harder for these programs. And the funding from the federal level has been cut over the years, so it's becoming harder to get. So we are looking for new innovative ways to maybe partner in that development. We do have a partnership where we've sold some lots to the Wasatch School District, and they have their students that build homes. And then when the home is completed, it gets sold to one of the faculty at Wasatch High School. So really cool program there. We'd love to see some more expansion of that.
Okay. You're also hiring. Is this a new position or is this Megan's replacement?
So it's a restructuring. After Megan left, you know, it's always a time where we can reevaluate where our resources, you know, need to be put. You know, obviously Angelica with our Housing Resource Center has seen a huge influx of clients coming in. So we need to get a little bit more resources there to help with that, you know, and as like an intake person to get the information, what these folks are looking for. So this new position, it's called the Housing Administrative Coordinator, is really going to help with Angelica and the Housing Resource Center. But in addition to that, they'll also be helping with the self-help program. You know, the administrative shooting of that, they'll also be helping me with some grant and fundraising efforts. So,
all right. One of the requirements is bilingual. Is that a hard, fast?
That is hard and fast. Yes, mm-hmm. They need to be fluent in both English and Spanish for this position.
And why is that?
I think because, you know, a lot of the clientele that we have coming in are Spanish speaking, native Spanish speaking, and so there definitely has a need for the Spanish speaking side of it. But at the same time, you know, obviously we do have English speaking folks coming in as well. So, but a lot of the folks coming in are only Spanish speaking, and so it's really important that we have someone that is fluent in Spanish.
Okay. Mountain Lands celebrated your 30th anniversary a couple of years ago already. Over that time, any idea how many units have been built?
We were just trying to put that stuff together, to be honest with you. I'll have to get back to you. I know in Summit County, I think we're just over 600 units that we've put together. And that's a split between our rental and our ownership. I think we've done over... I'm going to say 250 homeownership units. So, and then in Wasatch County, that's a lot smaller number, obviously, as we haven't been doing as much there. But we do have, I think it's, I'm trying to do the math here in my head. It's over 200 rental units for sure. And the homeownership is pretty low right now, but we'll see that expand quite a bit.
Yeah. And I guess as you kind of look to the future, I mean, what does that look like? In adding more units.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those, it's a tricky situation where you're trying to finish up a project right now, but you got to be looking, you know, 5 to 6 years ahead, right? And so we've got to try to find, and land is the hardest part, right? And so you're trying to identify your next piece of land that you'll be able to work with. And so we're always looking for opportunities and evaluating those, knowing that, you know, our priority right now is obviously with HOPA and Parkview to finish those up. But we do have to look at the future and see where we're going to develop next.
All right. And I think you did have some units out at Silver Creek Village, right?
We did. We completed in April, actually. Thanks for mentioning that. We completed Mineros, which was 24 affordable units there. And that was the last. We developed about 150 units in Silver Creek over the last 5 years or so, a mix of between ownership and rental units.
Okay. Anything else, Jason, you wanted to mention?
No, I just, I appreciate everyone's support of Mountain Lands. And, if you know somebody who might be interested in that position, please let us know. Go on our website. Anyone that's looking, you know, we're definitely looking for more folks for our self-help program. So if you're interested in something like that, look at our website as well.
Okay. Jason Glidden is the Executive Director of Mountain Lands Community Housing. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Park City Film at the Jim Santee Auditorium goes dark over Sundance, but will be back in February. In the meantime, volunteers will be staffing the library's theater snack counter to help raise money for the nonprofit. On the phone to tell us what we can look forward to before the theater closes for Sundance is Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so how soon do you have to close shop to let Sundance in?
Well, it's always been a great partnership with Sundance since we're one of the few venues, well, I guess not anymore. we're one of the few venues that operates as a movie theater during festival. And so it's the changeover is pretty seamless. What's nice is they set up a couple days before probably the 15th or 16th of January, and then we can roll into our film screening starting on the 17th that weekend, and it allows them to test their systems. We look very fancy for a weekend, give people a little preview of what's to come for the festival. So we pretty much operate right up until the festival starts and start back up again right after festival ends. So there's only two weekends that we will be dark, but as you mentioned, we will be selling lots of popcorn and candy and local treats, so you can still hang out and see your favorite Park City Film people if you'd like to come check out some films at the theater over there.
Okay, well, tell us what you've got between now then and when you shut the doors for Sundance.
So as we come into Sundance, you know, we always try to program films that kind of give people kind of a warm-up to the festival, if you will. It'll some tastes of really independent films. There'll be some films that were highlights of the film festival last year, and this year has just been an exceptional selection. So tonight we're starting off Sundance Film Festival alum Lucy Walker, who's an amazing director. Her new documentary, which premiered at Toronto International Film Festival, called The Summits of Lhakpa Sherpa. And Lhakpa holds the world record for most climbs of Everest by a woman, which is 10, and the film documents her 10th ascension, which is pretty amazing. But, you know, she's more than just, an amazing athlete. She's also an immigrant who lives in Connecticut currently, working at Whole Foods. She's a single mom, and she's also a survivor of domestic abuse. And her story is just one of resilience, bravery, and unwavering resolve that we thought would really resonate with the folks here in our community. I mean, who doesn't love seeing someone at the top of their game achieving their dreams, but also, you know, the human side of that. Like, what does it mean to be that kind of complete human being with all that complexity that it involves? involves. So it's an honor for us to be showing this film. It was something that was quite unique because it's not actually available in theaters generally, but we had a special inside angle on it, which was nice. And this will be presented as part of our Raising Voices film series. I want to thank Park City Municipal Corp and PC Chamber, Park City Chamber, for their support of that series. So that's tonight, 7 o'clock. Admission is free, but please register. We've had lots of interest in the film, as you can imagine. So I just want to make sure you get a seat for everyone. And then our weekend film is All We Imagine as Light. And this is a beautifully poetic narrative about three women living in Mumbai who are really struggling to find their place and make things work. It's a story about friendship, it's kind of a powerful act of resilience, and how sometimes big cities can sometimes feel like the loneliest place in the world. So it captured people's hearts at the Telluride Film Festival when I saw it over Labor Day weekend. It's been nominated, was nominated for 2 Golden Globe Awards, and is definitely kind of on the radar for the Oscars. So that'll be Friday and Saturday at 7, and then again Sunday at 6. Definitely an independent foreign language film, so something that we love. Again, kind of a warm-up to Sundance. Then we have a matinee screening on Saturday, which is, you know, something we do once a month. And this is our Family Film Fest series that we partner with the Park City Library on. So Saturday at 4 o'clock, we are showing My Penguin Friend. And this stars Jean Reno, who's one of my favorite actors. Little out of character for him. He's normally kind of an enforcer, you know, hitman type guy, The Professional, one of my favorite films. But it's based on a true story about an unlikely friendship between a fisherman and a penguin who would migrate from Patagonia down to the bottom of the world up to Brazil each year to visit his new friend. So beautifully acted, heartwarming, just perfect for film lovers of all ages. Again, that'll be Saturday, 4 o'clock. Admission and popcorn are free. I want to thank Summit County Wraptax for helping us bring that film here to our community and make it accessible to everyone. And then last but definitely not least, our last weekend before the festival starts is Porcelain War. And this film, I mean, it's hard to describe. It's just breathtaking. It premiered at the 2024 Sundance Film Festival. It won the Grand Jury Prize there, and it has been racking up awards ever since through the film festival circuit. It is actually the most decorated documentary of 2024. So an amazing accomplishment, and you'll see why here in a moment. It's about three artists who defiantly find beauty and inspiration as they defend their country, Ukraine, against Russia's ongoing and brutal invasion. And just one kind of clip that you'll hear in the trailer, which I love, that really describes the film so beautifully. It's saying that it's not that difficult to scare people, but it's hard to forbid them to live. And it just sends chills up my spine every time I hear that, of just how devastating and inspiring in equal measure this film is, and just kind of the transformative power of art to kind of persevere through these unimaginably difficult times. So I want to thank Ray and Bev Kent for supporting that film. They are lovers of Sundance as well as Park City Film, supporting both, but helping us to bring that great film back here to our community as we roll into the festival. So that'll be January 17th through 19th. At usual showtimes, Friday, Saturday, 7, Sunday at 6. You can go to parkcityfilm.org to check all those out.
All right, and then when you get back the weekend of the 7th through the 9th, the film The Room Next Door.
Yes, The Room Next Door. So this is Pedro Almodovar's first English language film, and it is a film about friendship and kind of just those questions that you ask and ask of each other as friends that are sometimes challenging. One of the characters is kind of at the end of her life, and she asks her friend to help her transition. And so it's certainly not a journey that you hope to take with your friends, but one that when asked, how could you say no? And just so beautifully acted, Tilda Swinton is just amazing in that film. But he's such an auteur, Pedro Almodovar, but to have his first English language film is a great way, we thought, to bring back everyone from the festival. Right back into the action. And then, of course, we'll be, you know, around during Sundance. We are still looking for some volunteers. Most of our slots are filled, so thank you, amazing volunteers. We are showing films, or we have volunteer shifts from 6 a.m. to midnight, as always happens, because life happens to all of us. Sometimes people have to cancel at the last minute, so if you're interested in signing up for shifts, please go to parkcityfilm.org, check out what we might have available, and if you do have flexibility during the festival, please email us. Information is on our website. You can email director@parkcityfilm.org, and let us know if you've got flexibility and you're like, hey, I live nearby, or I've got a flexible schedule, here's my email, you know, phone number, and then you can be on our call list, basically, to be like, hey, we need some help tomorrow. Can you come help us out? And it's amazing
how beneficial that has been over the past couple of years once we put that into action. So do not despair if there aren't shifts available immediately. Okay. There definitely will be coming up because there always is. That's just, you know, inevitable. But parkcityfilm.org, you can check that out for our schedule. And if you're at the festival and at the Library Theater checking out a film, please buy lots of concessions because we're supporting local businesses like Auntie M and Park City Coffee Roaster and Clockwork Cafe. And all of that revenue goes right back in to our programming thanks to the amazing volunteer labor that we are able to employ. So,
okay. And this is pretty important to your bottom line too, right? It's a big fundraiser for you.
It's our biggest fundraiser of the year, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, in large part because of the volunteer labor force that we're able to employ. If we had to pay everyone, I mean, one, we couldn't pay them what they're worth because they are amazing. But if we did have to pay them, you know, we just wouldn't be able to generate enough revenue. It's a huge effort for us. It's a big operation. We're the biggest concession operation of the festival, but, you know, margins are slim in food service, as anyone who owns a restaurant will know. We're not able to serve alcohol, unfortunately, which would increase those. But, you know, it's a labor of love. We want people, when they're coming to town to see these movies, to feel welcome, to have good food, to have great popcorn, to just, I mean, I'd say 50% of going to the movie is the atmosphere, the people around you, and just, you know, kind of feeding your body and soul at the same time. So for us, it's a real, it's an act of love, but it also certainly helps our bottom line as well.
Sure. Now, do volunteers, I mean, other than helping you out, do they get any perks? I mean, do they get a voucher to go see a film or?
They do, yes. Yep, we don't have the fancy jacket because it's not the Sundance Film Festival volunteer program, so sorry about that. We don't have any great swag for you. But we do offer, for one shift, you can get either two tickets to Park City Film that never expire, and you can use those throughout the year, give them to your friends, or you can get a ticket to a Sundance film. And it's a voucher, so you can just pick your own film. But it's a great partnership we have with Sundance. We're able to make those available to folks.
Okay. Any Sundance films you're looking forward to?
Yes, actually, lots. Kiss of the Spider Woman just popped out immediately when I was looking through the catalog. It's one of my favorite films, the original with William Hurt and Raul Julia from 1985. I love the play. I mean, it's just a film that kind of I've always loved. But that's a new a remake of it. Actually, the musical, the stage version, is coming back in the form of this film. So that'll be fun to see with Jennifer Lopez. Reed Davenport, who we've shown a couple of his films, I Didn't See You There, has a new film called Life After. Marley Matlin, Not Alone Anymore, documentary about kind of her journey as a deaf actor in Hollywood and kind of now how this scene has changed. And so she's not alone anymore, as the title suggests. The Wedding Banquet, which is a remake of a classic film. Andrew Ahn, who's just a fantastic director who we've seen many times at Sundance, is taking up this film. Lily Gladstone is in it. And then, of course, as a New Yorker, how can I not want to see Love, Brooklyn? just a great homage to my part of the world, where I'm from. And then, of course, Sly Lives, which, of course, is about Sly and the Family Stone. Sly Lives, a.k.a. The Burden of Black Genius. Just, you know, an amazing documentary about the film. I mean, sorry, about the film, about the band and their journey and just the impact that it's had on American culture. So, I mean, there's so many to choose from. It's always fantastic. It's like the best time of year for a film lover. It's like Christmas and Hanukkah and your birthday and like everything else all wrapped up into one. So I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Okay. You kind of keep a note of this, I think. How did you guys do with the Golden Globe films that were nominated this year? I mean, that you were able to show at the Santee this past year?
Well, it's funny because we showed Anora last weekend, which had been nominated for enormous number of films, and it won nothing, which was very disappointing because I love that film and I think it's amazing. So I think we did pretty well, but it's always interesting with the award ceremony of kind of what gets the nod and what's done. And I mean, it's so political in some regards, but Conclave, you know, certainly did well. Amelia Perez, which we loved, Real Pain, also did well. We are hoping to get A Complete Unknown, which was on the list, but I don't think it won any awards actually at the Golden Globes, which of course is about Bob Dylan with Timothée Chalamet. So look forward to that. Look for that coming up in February or March. But no, I think it's the Golden Globes, I think we're less kind of in tune to. It's more the Academy Awards where we'll see lots, because as we get closer towards the Academy Awards, that's when we start kind of
siphoning down our film selections so that we're more closely tracking what's going on, because that's, of course, what people are interested in seeing, right? As soon as the nominations come out, all of those films get re-released, and people want to see these films, understandably, that are arguably the best of the year. So we're always looking at films of, like, what we like and then mixing things in. All We Imagine Is Light has been talked about on the by critics and certainly in the awards circuit. But, you know, if it's winning films or not, it's still a great film to see. So,
okay. All right. Well, we'll check back with you next month. Thanks, Katie.
Yes. Thank you so much. ParkCityFilm.org. Folks, come out and see some great films. And please check us out during the festival. We'd love to see you.
That's Katie Wang, Executive Director of Park City Film.